Blog Talk Radio.
So,
But I knew how to handle it. I mean, I was pretty smart and adaptive and creative, and so I dealt with it. I got around it for the most part, and that I couldn't get around, I made radical changes, that didn't include slaughtering people, and it just gives you pause for thought. It really does. And I've been, literally in prayer all weekend for these families, man. I just cannot imagine, this woman's on the television, man, because the anguish is so palpable, yelling at the camera, Trump, you got to do something. I'm making arrangements for my daughter's funeral. She's 14 years old. I mean, that is, it almost brought tears to my eye. I mean, I cannot and don't want to imagine what these families are going through. And I don't know if it's, and some people will say, Dennis, what are you talking about? But I don't actually know if it's a matter of gun control. I really don't. And I'm not saying that because, I'm an avid hunter. Well, not avid, but, I do hunt on occasion. I don't use, don't use handguns at all. Mostly if I do decide to hunt, it'll be a shotgun or a rifle. I prefer, really, really low calibers like 22 LRs and things like that, of that nature, because I don't really go for deer. I find the meat venison extraordinarily lean, and you have to almost cook it rare for it to, to be, tasty. To me, that's just, my opinion. And most game is lean because they aren't, they're on cage. They're walking around, they're exercising, they're eating, whatever they can forage. So the point I'm trying to make, however, is that, they have systems in place to prevent. I mean, if they really were serious about it, and I was thinking about this for a long time, I mean, how could you absolutely prevent criminals? And I don't know that that would work because you have, they're already in Virginia. They started going after straw purchasers and down in Florida and places like that, where people without a criminal background or at least a disqualifying criminal background, you can have a criminal background and still get a gun, but a disqualifying criminal background, will buy a gun and sell it to someone intent on committing a crime or doing others harm. So there is a provision, not a provision, but there was a proposal out there to deal with that that would also include background checks for persons that wanted to buy ammunition. And I was thinking, yeah, man, that would work. That would definitely work if you stop people from buying bullets, shells, that sort of thing. But then, what's to stop the straw purchasers from going in and buying ammo en masse? Just buying, hundreds, if not thousands of rounds of ammo. So I don't know that that would work. I think, however, if we wanted to look at this from a rational perspective, then I could see banning assault weapons. I really can. There is absolutely, these guys, Langford, I know I was watching Chuck Todd yesterday on NBC. That's really basically only. I used to watch Stephanopoulos. I used to like him a lot. He actually comes on earlier, but it conflicted with worship service because I'm typically in church at that time. So at any rate, Chuck Todd had on this senator from Oklahoma, Langford, and he's an apologist for the NRA, like the vast majority of them, even some of the Democratic senators. But at any rate, he was saying that people actually hunt with AR-15s. I imagine they do. I don't know any because, like I said, if I do hunt, I typically use a crossbow or a long gun that's of a very low caliber, like 22 LR or something like that, or even a shotgun. I won't, absolutely, why would you use a submachine gun to hunt an animal? I mean, it's just the rationale and the rationalizations, rather, you know, become bizarre at a certain juncture, because you know that it's nonsensical. There is no other way to parse it. It's just absolutely nonsensical to allow weapons of mass destruction, really weapons that were designed for soldiers in combat, to be purchased by civilians. For what purpose? You know, and we see evidence of our folly, you know, in these repeated acts of terror. Now this is the biggest, then that was the biggest, then this is going to be bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, at what point do we, you know, have same policy? I mean, let's look at it from this perspective. I was just thinking about this. I mean, how powerful can the NRA be, man? I mean, they don't have unlimited resources. I mean, where do they get their money from? I mean, donations primarily, and membership dues. So you got to ask yourself, who is donating to the National Rifle Association? They're based right there in Alexandria, I believe, Virginia. I mean, if you go down 95 with a Beltway 495, you can literally see their building on the northbound side. You know, they have a huge building that overlooks the Beltway. And you have to say that someone with a vested interest in ensuring that these type of tragedies continue to occur is doing it. And you say, well, that sounds conspiratorial, and it might be. But I cannot figure out for the life of me why we'd allow this to happen. And arming teachers and all this foolishness, man. I mean, teachers aren't trained. Most teachers would be probably disarmed and injured if they didn't bother to shoot themselves. I mean, it takes a lot. I mean, you know, cops, law enforcement, I know these guys, you know, soldiers and stuff. They stay on the rifle range. They really do. You know, and it's just like everything else that you do. Practice makes perfect. Us on the radio, when we hear at Mark and Pulpit International coming on every week and providing you with information that might enable you to expand capacity or develop business and that sort of thing, you know, it takes preparation, a lot of reading, a lot of research and that sort of thing. So everything, every field of endeavor requires an enormous investment in time and energy. And certainly what we see in these particular cases, you know, we just had them back to back to back. I mean, you know, it's just really unfathomable. And at a certain point, you know, you just can't get your head around it anymore. You become numb and immune. And like I said, all weekend long, I was just, really praying for these families, because I don't want to know what they're going through. I mean, I really don't. And you might say, well, that's selfish. And it is, because I cannot imagine the pain that these parents are experiencing and don't want to. I mean, that is just, it's outrageous that this. And the other part of it is putting on my lawyer cap. You know, because everyone says, you know, like, you have Chump the Brain Dead Comic Carnival Barker, a.k.a. Clueless the Clown, out tweeting some foolishness, typical nonsensical rubbish about they knew and the FBI knew and why wasn't something done. Well, you know, Earth to Rump is a little thing known as the Fourth Amendment. Prevents unlawful search and seizure. Well, that applies to persons as well, sir. And the bottom line is that to get an involuntary commitment, a commitment to a mental health facility, takes a lot. It takes a judge's order. And judges aren't psychiatrists or psychologists or even social workers. Most judges are lawyers. They don't have the skill sets, competencies, and faculty to make a determination as to whether a person is competent or not. And that's the standard by which, you know, one is involuntarily committed. Is the person competent, you know, or is he or she a danger to himself or others? And, you know, the police have some limited, as do Child Protective Services and Adult Protective Services, certain agencies, you know, mandated reporters primarily, you know, or social workers that are trained to identify these types of dysfunction can make a recommendation to the court. And it's up to the court to determine it or not. But, you know, I've known many, many cases. I was just talking to a family member about this, about someone in their family who had, they were questioning the person's, you know, competence. And the judge absolutely would not grant the person's son, would not make him trustee of that person's, you know, estate, essentially. You know, the person's still alive, but they didn't feel that the person was competent. If you can come in and answer, you know, do a Glasgow scale, you know, what's your date, name, date, age, you know, time of the day, color, and that sort of thing. You know, the judge is basically hamstrung in terms of what he can do, and they don't do it. And typically those type of determinations are carried out in family court, you know, for the, you know, and you don't get the best and the brightest in family court. I mean, you know, certainly when you go up, you know, to, you know, in these, you know, local courts that make these determinations, you know, you don't get the best and the brightest in these courts. Family courts, and certainly, you know, they deal with a lot of children, a lot of dysfunction, foster care, and guardianship and that sort of thing, but they're not experts at it. You know, when I worked for New York State, they had a whole mental hygiene legal services, was the name of the non-for-profit, and those lawyers were specifically trained to deal with this type of occurrence, you know, guardianship and assistance, you know, you know, where you're petitioning the court to literally take a person's right from them to act in their own behalf. So it's a serious process, and, you know, like I said, most courts, most judges aren't trained to make those determinations, and they're hesitant to do it with good reason because, again, you run a foul of a person's constitutional rights, man. It becomes a constitutional issue at that point, man. It can go to the Title III court, you know, a federal court, where, you know, unless you have, you know, really compelling evidence of, you know, that the person is and from all objective reporting, the perpetrator of this latest heinous crime was high functioning. He was functioning high enough where he wasn't under the radar by any means, stretch of the imagination, but he managed to acquit himself well enough to be able to avoid the sort of drastic measure that the courts would have been able to take, which is involuntary commitment, and they're just not going to do it. Let's take a break and come back on another. If I can find... I have my card open, but I have all this stuff over here. Let's take a break and come back on the other side of the break to finish up.
The Endangered Species Act of 1973 was signed into law by President Richard M. Nixon on December 28, 1973. It was designed to protect critically imperiled species from extinction as a consequence of economic growth and development untempered by adequate concern and conservation. The U.S. Supreme Court found that the plain intent of Congress in enacting the ESA was to halt, reverse the trend towards species extinction, whatever the cause. A species is considered to be endangered if it's in danger of extinction throughout its lifespan, or a significant portion of its habitat is threatened, destroyed, or invaded, or if it is likely to become an endangered species within the foreseeable future. Then why are black boys on this list? Black boys are an endangered species. Please go to GoFundMe and to our campaign at /PLZ2MO and contribute generously to help us build an alternative school for these boys that will become a national model for educational innovation. Again, go to GoFundMe and to our campaign at /PLZ2MO.
I was talking to my significant other about this because my son is still school age. And by the way, you're tuned to the Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman, 10:49 a.m. It's 47 degrees and sunny here in Brooklyn, New York. It's Monday, February 19th, 2018, and we're talking. It just happened organically. I hadn't planned on discussing this latest shooting, Parkland shooting in Florida. It's 37 miles from Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. But, you know, the pain that these parents are experiencing, it just compelled me to dedicate my show here on this President's Day to these families. And I don't know the answer. I'm a fairly smart guy, and those that want to call in and join the show, give me a call at 215-383-3872. Again, that number is 215-383-3872. But I don't have the answer. I really don't, you know. And as parents, our first duty is to protect our children. It really is, you know, at all costs, you know. These families are feeling a combination of thoughts, of sentiments, you know, regarding their inability to protect their children and you know, leaving them vulnerable. And, you know, that's a rural, you know, not a rural district, but it wasn't a great district. It's a fairly overcrowded school. I don't know that that had anything to do with it, you know, because I've dealt with a huge, large school district before, really have worked in them, and I got out quickly. And I was telling someone else that. I said, this is why I don't teach at the secondary school level. I taught a very large school system, much like this one, you know, 3,000 plus students, relatively low performing, teacher student ratio 23-1, and you know, kids get lost in the sauce in systems like that, you know, because at you know, you figure at 14, 15, these students are starting to think like adults. And they're having, you know, they're involved in all sort of relationships, and they have issues associated with it because they're too young to deal with the feelings that arose inevitably as a consequence of that. So, you know, they have a lot of issues going on. And then the other part of it is that a lot of kids, teenagers, can be cruel. And so you have a lot of bullying going on, and now with the advent of the internet, a lot of kids are using social media, Instagram and Snapchat and these other things, Facebook and MySpace and so on and so forth, to bully each other, those that are in and those that are out and this sort of thing. So, and that contributes, and the kid might have been bullied. The other part of it is I found this out anecdotally, biographically. I have no data, as I usually say as a disclaimer, to support this conclusion. But I suspected very strongly that a lot of the other part of it is, especially with these white male shooters, is that they are incapable of getting into a relationship, a healthy, productive relationship. I'm not saying, you know, a dysfunctional relationship, you know, with whoever, you know, setting sexual orientation aside, they. You know, most of these guys are loners, and, you know, humans crave companionship. We really do. And so, you know, the bitterness, and again, this is anecdotal. It's all biographical. There's no evidence to support this, but these guys, most of them don't have girlfriends. I mean, let's keep it real. They are loners, and they're bitter and angry, and you know, they take out their anger and frustration on innocence. You know, they join these hate groups, you know, looking for, it's just like a kid in the inner city joining a gang because he wants to belong to something bigger than himself. We all do, you know. That's why as adults and professionals we join sororities and fraternities and professional organizations and churches. so that we could be a part of something that's bigger than them. And these guys, they do it also, but they do it in a dysfunctional manner. And we can see the fallout as a consequence of bad choices that these people make, because, you know, this guy is alive and well and will die in jail, we know, but those children that he massacred will not be coming back. And we have to think about that as we think about gun control in this country. And like I said, I don't know the answer. But I think that if we start at least with those two things, you know, I'm not talking about a broad ban on gun ownership at all. I don't think it would fly. As a matter of fact, I knew it. No, it would not. Forgive me. I don't know why I'm getting tongue-twisted, tongue-tied. But, you know, just requiring background checks for persons that want to purchase ammunition and banning assault rifles, you know, the few loopholes that they've been talking about, I think that would help quell, you know, this rash of shootings that we see with greater and greater frequency. It's just outrageous. It, you know, I don't think that is, you know, I understand the argument on both sides. Well, you know, it's not the law-abiding. Well, that's not really true, because this guy was law-abiding, and the Air Force veteran, he wasn't law-abiding because he had been convicted in the Air Force of a crime under the military, blah, 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 under the military's code of justice. And forgive me if I messed that up, because I can't think of the name of it, but they have their own, everything is a felony. Let's put it that way. In the military, you get in trouble in the military and you're in serious hot water. So this guy had been convicted of assaulting his wife and kicking her baby. I'm going to leave that one there. And that conviction, which resulted in his separation from the Air Force, didn't go into the National Crime Information Center or the FBI's database, which would have prohibited him from purchasing firearms. So it's things like that we've been talking about over the last, I don't know, a couple of decades, certainly since Columbine, that need to be done in a rational attempt, not an irrational or a knee-jerk attempt, but in at least a rational attempt to control who actually has weapons, and if the person is like the mental health thing that Trump rescinded, Obama put into place. So we're going to have to talk about these things, and we're going to have to talk about them more and more and more, else we revisit this awful situation in Parkland, Florida, again and again and again. Have a great week.
Yeah. for education.